My name is Victor Kubik, President of the United Church of God. Welcome to Inside United. Today our guest is Hazel Huck from the United Kingdom. Hazel works at the church's office in the British Isles, and she is here with two others from the United Kingdom for the Leadership Weekend that we hold here annually during the Labor Day weekend. Hello, Hazel. Welcome to Inside United.
Good morning, Vic. Thank you for inviting me.
I would like to hear, Hazel, about your story. Also, what one thing is fascinating about Hazel, as far as her work is concerned, she's retired now from a job that she's had for probably two or three decades, working for the London Underground, the iconic subway system that most Americans know only by it was the bomb shelter in World War II. But that's about all they know. And I, when I lived in the United Kingdom, I really enjoyed the underground, the map for it. In fact, I had a map for it that hung on the wall for a long time. Hazel, welcome to Inside United, and we'd like to hear from you.
Well, as you've said, I'm a born and bred Londoner. I grew up in Northwest London. I grew up with three brothers. I went to a normal, well, technically I was brought up Church of England, but my parents weren't churchgoers, so I don't have any actual true recollection of going to church as a child. But and then in October 1973, I joined the London Underground, working on what was or what is the oldest of the London Underground lines, the Metropolitan Line. That the iconic part of the Metropolitan Line is from Praed Street to Farringdon. Obviously, it began as a steam. It has undergone several upgrades into electrification. It's now undergoing another intense upgrade, the whole of the line, because it did eventually get extended through to the City of London and out into the suburbs from Baker Street. I guess most people will know Baker Street from Sherlock Holmes fame. So from Baker Street, it moves northbound to places like Wembley, which is generally called Wembley Stadium. It's the national stadium, usually associated with what we call football, with what you refer to as soccer. Wembley is where they hold the actual final of the FA Cup. And it carries on north to places through places called Pinner and Northwood and Watford, to Ruislip and Uxbridge, and finishes at Amersham, which is where I live, so it's actually quite handy to have a tube station nearby. And it's generally referred to in the suburbs as Metroland, because the poet John Betjeman, he immortalised the Metropolitan Line in one of his programmes called Metroland.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is very interesting. I know that you're a modest person, but you had a job as a manager of one of the lines. Tell us what it was.
Yes, some of the titles on London Underground can actually be misleading. The actual job title was operations manager, but I didn't actually manage people. London Underground was introducing its new ticketing system, which involved machines and manually operated ticket machines, and money would be accounted for more electronically than it was under the old system. But that was the first way. It was just dealing with the ticketing system. And I actually transferred out of the ticketing system area to another report centre, which went from dealing with one asset group to about a dozen or more asset groups, which includes safety critical assets like track, signals, lifts and escalators, fire protection. And we had to know not just the asset groups, but the pieces of equipment within each asset group. And we had to know which contractors would deal with which type of equipment. We were also expected to make informed decisions on our own, rather than go to a higher manager.
Well, it's been interesting to talk to an insider here for the London Underground. For me, it's fascinating because I lived in the London area, you know, in Brickett Wood, Watford, and I know that we'd go to London with a regularity, and as big a city as it was, one of the largest cities in the world, but you could get almost anywhere very, very quickly.
It covers a massive area, which in some other countries, they would just not see that kind of extension. Mm-hmm. I don't even know, I've not seen the New York subway, but I don't know if the two are comparable in terms of size, but certainly the London Underground is much more than just London.
Yeah, it's also more elegant than the New York system. Now, Hazel, one thing that is of special interest to me is you grew up in an environment of no real religion. And when we preach the gospel in areas like the United Kingdom, we know that we're talking to a society that is really not interested in religion at all. It could really be said to be the post-Christian era. And yes. When we preach, we just don't know how much we're getting through to people. There's no interest, background, anything about religion. And here you are, Hazel, with no background whatsoever. What made you take an interest and come to the point now where you work at the British office?
Well, as I say, I was technically brought up Church of England. My parents weren't churchgoers. Obviously, we were taught in school about Jesus. But I really don't remember it being anything that caught my imagination. And of course, ending up on the London Underground, I always did the whole of my working life doing shift work. And it was all the shifts, earlys, lates, nights, weekends. So there was no room, in a sense, for any church. But it just turned out that the week before Christmas 2008, I was on a night shift at the weekend. And for some reason, I just decided to take a search on the internet for when was Jesus born. Because over time, you get things filter through to you that, well, he wasn't really born on the 25th of December and Christmas isn't really a Christian thing. And of course, there's a whole raft of items there telling you he could only have been born in the autumn, and they started quoting scriptures. And that was quite an eye-opener to actually see in writing people using scripture to prove that Jesus couldn't have been born at the start of winter. It had to be at the start of autumn or in the autumn season. So that set me on a journey to find out more. And I clicked on other websites and I came across one which spoke of Saturday being the Sabbath. And I read through the reasons and it just began to make sense to me. Mm-hmm. The problem I had was, well, how do I get round this need to worship on a Saturday and keep it special? And here I am doing shift work. And I, sounds funny, I wrote a kind of dear diary letter to myself. How do you resolve this problem? And within a few days, I began to think, well, perhaps if I speak to my pension people within the London Underground, what sort of pension would I get if I took an early retirement? So I went to them, they provided me with my figures, sat down, worked out what my outgoings were, what I was going to get in, and I thought, I can do this. I can actually take retirement and fulfill how the Sabbath is supposed to be kept and still manage to pay the bills. So I actually retired at the very end of June 2009. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have anywhere to go, so I would just treat Saturday as a special day at home. I would read the Bible. I would try and find things on the internet to help with what I was reading. Mm-hmm. And as I began to keep each holy day, I began to feel more and more, this is right. So, mm-hmm. And it is how your mind works every Saturday. And I knew it was the right thing to do. And I just felt so relaxed doing the Saturday just at home, reading the Bible and not worrying about going and doing the shopping or going to the hairdressers or anything like that.
What a story. You know, just what a story about being in a country where it doesn't matter. This is foolishness to most people. And here you are benefiting from it and showing fruits of it being good and beneficial to you.
So again, I just continued sort of searching the web and talking about churches, talking about other churches, and I would go and look at their websites. And I came across this website called UCG, and I downloaded some of the literature. And everything, and I would still tell people even today, everything that UCG wrote was written in such an easy-to-read style. It was such a lovely style that for someone who'd never understood the holy days and why you needed to keep them, it was such an easy thing to understand. And I felt because it was so simple, easy to read, easy to understand, and I knew then, you know, the full direction that I needed to go. And in the spring of 2013, I turned up in the London congregation. I just actually turned up there one day.
just by yourself, you didn't.
Just by myself, I didn't. I didn't ring the pastor. I walked in, and I didn't really know what to expect. I wasn't sure what I would get from the service, what the people would be like, and all the rest of it. But the very first sermonette, the speaker was talking about Passover and unleavened bread. And that is when I really began to learn about the intricate details of unleavened bread, because mm-hmm. up until that point, although I was doing the holy day at home on my own, I had just literally stopped eating bread. But then you hear about it's all the other stuff that have leavening in it. And I just realized that there was so much more to all of this. And again, the sermon and sermonettes, all the messages were delivered in that same easygoing, easy to listen to, easy to understand style. And I just thought, I'm home.
And you've been home since.
I've been home ever since.
It's really a wonderful story. I mean, I've enjoyed your story. It's just been very, very inspiring. And I wonder how many other people there are like you out there that are just studying, looking, and as God clarifies their thinking, just like with you.
Yeah, it's very difficult to say. We've obviously had, or we have had in the last few months, a massive spike compared to what we were sending out in the months beforehand. About May time, we had a massive spike in requests, and we're not really sure where it's actually coming from, but whether people are just seeing how the political condition is in the British Isles with Brexit, and they're seeing everything that's going on around the world in terms of the way things are deteriorating, and whether that's worrying people. Mm-hmm. And I guess if you don't have any idea of what the future holds, you do try and look for answers, and we're getting some of those requests.
Well, Brexit, October 31st. Brexit
yes.
will take place no matter what, deal or no deal or whatever. I would like to hear from you, from one who lives right there. To us, it's, well, if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't. To you, it's your life.
Yes.
Tell us your reaction.
Regardless of the result, I think it's sad the way the politicians have actually reacted. We know they're different political ideas, but it was what the majority of the people wanted. I think the first saddest part was that although the Prime Minister of the day, Mr. Cameron, set this referendum in motion, he didn't actually plan for a no vote. So mm-hmm. consequently, when the result came in as no...
He was horrified.
He was horrified, and there was no plan of action. And unfortunately, he left rather quickly, and Mrs. May came in, and I think she was on a losing battle.
What about now with Boris?
Boris, yes, it's, well, so the press keeps saying that has united the country is that everyone is so disgusted with all our politicians, how they've behaved and still behaving. I mean, Boris has always been a character, and it just seems, well, he was a Brexiteer anyway. Mm-hmm. So he wanted out, and it seems as if he's going to come out come what may. Mm-hmm. We'll just have to wait and see if the ship sinks or if it does begin to float back up again.
So UK was part of Europe, and they had the security, so to speak, yep. of that. Now they're out there alone on an island, and they look to the west, to the United States, mm-hmm. perhaps a closer bonding as brothers, but still it's inevitable that they will have to work with Europe.
Yes.
Some interesting developments may occur.
Yes, we'll just have to wait and see on that. Obviously, the papers are full of the kind of trade deals that we might have. Unfortunately, some of the response, because obviously we hear about trade deals with the United States, and all that must include the National Health Service, and then you get stories of Mr. Trump saying, you know, the British are really not that fussed about the NHS. Well, that's not a true story. The British are totally committed to their National Health Service for every single individual to have it free at the point of contact is precious. Mm-hmm. What we do object to is how successive governments have perhaps not invested as much as we think they should. Mm-hmm. And yes, you're getting a different kind of, you know, people are living longer, and so the ailments get longer and there's more requirement. But yeah, they do need to look at their investment. But everyone, I can assure you, is very, very committed to the national health as in terms of the ordinary people. If they didn't have that, they would probably be lost. It is so precious.
Well, perhaps some of this type of fear and anxiety is causing people to think, to wonder, is there some other source I can turn to for comfort? Maybe one that we've neglected.
And for me to have the truth that we have is so comforting, because so many people, the stories you hear of people just being so lost and don't know where to turn, and the anxiety issues go up, the fear of suicides goes up, and all that sort of stuff. So it really is just so comforting to have the truth that we do have.
One final question. I see that you're quite involved with the Feast of Tabernacles in Llandudno, if I pronounce it correctly, in Wales.
Well, an Englishman would pronounce it Llandudno. The Welsh pronounce it Llandudno. So we understand that the way you've pronounced it.
What are you doing for the feast?
I've been asked to take charge of the reception desk. I have helped on the reception desk over the last few feasts, and so that has carried on. And last year, I was officially asked to help out on the reception desk, and this year I've been asked to take charge of it. So I think that's a privilege. It's just great to have all the people coming into you. You've got all their names there, and they come in and you start to see who are the kind of people that are attending your local feast.
Well, for those of you going to the Feast of Tabernacles in Wales, in Llandudno or Clundon, whatever, however pronounced by the Welsh, be sure to look up Hazel Huck. Wonderful person. We have been so honored and privileged to meet Hazel. So thank you very much for joining us today, Hazel.
Thank you for asking me here.
It's been just wonderful, lovely to have you here. So thank you for joining us on Inside United. Be sure to tell your friends to listen to Inside United. Come to the UCG website and click on the podcast button on the homepage, or use your favorite podcast app on Android or iOS. You can find us by searching for Inside United. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening, and want these wonderful people that we talked to come back again soon for more.
This is a production of the United Church of God. For more, visit ucg.org.